Hevi'a lefanav, most of you probably learned this Mishnah in the past couple of weeks. Hevi'a lefanav, mitzvah b'chazeret, ad shem hevi'a lepreper hapat. Hevi'a lefanav, matzah b'chazeret b'charoset, u'shnei tafshilin, af al pi she'ein charoset mitzvah. Rabbi Elazar omer, Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok omer mitzvah. I don't want to go through the whole Mishnah, because we're like already 20 minutes behind schedule. So it's describing bringing the Seder plates to the out to the table, and they bring, and they dip in the chazeret. This is actually, the first phrase of the Mishnah is actually a very complicated phrase, what it means, but I don't want to talk about it now. Heviu, I want to talk about the second clause. Heviu lefanav, they bring matzah, chazeret, charoset, and tutaf shilin, right? That's the Seder plate, basically being described here. But of the things listed, it says they bring charoset, even though the charoset is not a mitzvah, but Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok disagrees and says, yes, charoset is a mitzvah. So the Gemara on that says, second source, Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok omer mitzvah, my mitzvah, what is the mitzvah of charoset? Rabbi Levi omer zecher letapuach, Rabbi Yochanan omer zecher letit. So Rabbi Levi says that the charoset is there to remember the apple, and Rabbi Yochanan says that it's there to remember the mortar, right? Tit is mortar. Okay, you... Obviously, since you're very young children, you learned like what the charoset is. So, which you mortar. Know, what mortar. Is it? It's a mortar, mortar. Right? Okay.
It's like cement.
Yes,
like cement, right? That they use to make the bricks for building. Okay, right. That's what you look at the charoset, and it reminds you of the cement and the building and the shi'abud of Mitzrayim, right? That's what we all know from Gan. I want to spend time actually on the apple here. Rabbi Levi says that it is to remember the apple.
What's the apple?
Oh,
like Shir Shirim.
Good. Yeah. What do you mean by that?
You're
on the right track, okay? So he doesn't explain himself, okay? And go on for a minute. We'll look for an explanation. But before, let's continue a little bit. Amar Abaye, Hilkach tzarich lekahuye v'tzarich lesamuche. Therefore, Abaye says, we have to lekahuye and lesamuche. Let's look at Rashi, who defines both of those terms. Lesamuche, to make it samich, to make it thick. Lahatzil v'lechtosh bo harbei kadeshi yehe av. Right, to mix it up a lot so that it will be thick, av. V'tzarich lekahuye, not sure what that means yet. Lahatzil bo tapuchim v'yayin lekahuye, Rashi interprets as putting in it apples and wine. Umiltad itbe kihuya. Kihuya is acid, right? You have to make it acidic. Okay, we have to make it thick to remember the mortar, the bricks, the shiabud, and you have to make it acidic to remember the apples. So this one's a little circular, right? You're putting apples in it to remember the apples, right? Okay, that's a good way, I guess, to remember the apples. But we still don't know what the apples are, right? What apples are there? Like, you know, we've all learned Sefer Shmos. What are the apples that we're remembering?
Oh, it's
beautiful. All the note learners in the room. Here we go. Okay. So Masechet Sota. Masechet Sota, I'm not going to go through it all inside, but Masechet Sota has like a very long section where it really goes through interpreting Sukkim in Sefer Shmot. Zerash Rabbi Avira, B'schar Nashim Tzidkaniyot, Shehayu Ba'oto Hadzor, Nigalu Yisrael Mimitzrayim, B'sha'ash Shehochot Lish'ov Mayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mezamein Lahem Zagim, K'tanim B'kadehem, B'sha'ovot Mechza, Mayim Mechza Zagim, U'ba'ot B'softo'ot Shtei K'tirot, Achat Shalchamin V'achat Shal Zagim. Okay, it seems like I'm going through the whole thing. Rabbi Avira says, right, a famous quote, that Bishkar Nashim Sikaniot Shahu Ba'oto Hadzor Nigalu Yisrael Mitzrayim. It is the because of the reward of the righteous woman of that generation that Am Yisrael were redeemed from Mitzrayim. And then, now, there's ample evidence of that. Like, pause right here before we read the rest of the Gemara, right? If you just saw that quote of Rabbi Avira, right, that it was the righteous woman of the generation who brought about the Geula, who are those righteous women?
Miriam.
Bat Paro.
Shifra, Pua.
Bat Paro.
Right? Like, we've got a lot of righteous women. The Gemara surprisingly... What?
Was it in your
class?
Holy. No, Rabbi Dina did it with us in Women.
Okay. Because why does it come up in Woman Malacha? Because you learn in, like, was she doing halachic peace?
No, we were doing
Halachic peace, right?
Yeah.
When the Gemara says that women are chayavot in Arbakosot, right? It is because of Afhein Hayuva Otso Hanes, and Rashi quotes the Gemara and Sotza there also, right? Saying that how were women part of the miracle of Pesach is because of Nashim Tzidkaniyot. Now, you just named a lot of righteous women. The Gemara actually doesn't immediately here name all the famous righteous women who are actually discussed in Sefer Shmot, but we are going to talk about them. Instead, the Gemara actually generalizes not only to these specific women, but to Ba'oto Hadzor, just the women of that generation, and describes this whole scene in vivid detail, lots of symbolism. We're not going to go into the details of the symbolism here, but describes this whole scene of what's happening in the scene. The premise of this scene, of the women going off the fields and feeding and seducing their husbands, is right, because what's the premise of this? Because why are their husbands out in the fields?
Because
they're slaves, right? So the premise here is that the men are being enslaved with hard labor in the fields, and the women who are alone, you know, by themselves at home, keeping up, keeping things going back in home, they go out to the fields in order to feed their husbands, but also to bathe their husbands and to seduce their husbands. Why?
So
that they will continue having children. Skipping a little bit, again, it's a beautiful Gemara. We could spend the whole night just on the symbolism here, but I'm going to skip a little bit to the last line, which is bolded right at the end of the scene, is V'yoldot basadet tachat hatapuach shene'emar tachat hatapuach orarticha. Right, the last step in this whole scene, this whole imagery of the women going out to the fields, it is, then they would become pregnant. And ultimately, what's the problem though once they're pregnant?
You're going to grab the babies.
Right? They're the gzeira of Paro that they're going to kill the babies. So, in order to give birth safely, they have to go back out to the fields again. They have to go back out to the fields to give birth, and we base under the apple trees, right? That's where the apples come in, and this is based on Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Tachat HaTapuach Orarticha, under the apple trees I aroused you. Okay, that's where the apples are. So when we have a haroset on the Seder plate, we have the tapuach there in order to remember this dedication of the women. That was the last line of that, right? Okay, great. Now, the Gemara goes on. The Gemara goes on to point out, as you all did when I said, who are the Nashim Tzidkaniyot, that even without this whole background story that the Gemara is kind of making up here, right, there is very clear in the text of the Torah itself that there are an ample number of heroines in this story. So the Gemara from Sotza goes from generalizing the Nashim Tzidkaniyot and actually goes through some of the specifics. Famous Midrashim, you're probably familiar with most of what's in here. Yelech ish mi beit levi. I'm sorry. Vayelech ish mi beit levi. Right, that's the opening pasuk of Perek Bet of Sefer Shmot, where it describes Moshe's birth, and it describes that a man went from the house of Levi. And the Gemara says, Lehechan halach, right? Why do we need those opening words, right? Amar Bihuda bar Zvina shahalach be'atzat bito, that he went following the advice of his daughter. Tana Amram Gadol Hazor Haya Kevan Shegazar Paro Harasha Kol Haben Hayulud Hayorat Hashlichu Amar Lashad Anu Emelim Amad Vigureisha Disho Amdu Chulan Vigurshu and Shotehan. Okay, so again, we all learned this from a very young age, probably, right? That what happened, Amram, who was a Gadol Hazor, what did he say? If there's a Gzerah that the children are going to be thrown in the or, then why are we going to have l'shav anu en levim, right? It's a very, very dense phrase, right? We are working for nothing, right? What are we doing bringing children into the world when there's a approximately 50%, 49 point whatever percent chance that child is not going to survive? We all know the end of this, right? I want to pause and put ourselves for a moment into that place in history, right? We know the end, right? What's the end? I don't have to read the whole thing inside. That Moshe is born because
it's like, are you gonna punish the girls?
Miriam argues with him, right? We're gonna read the inside in a minute, but Miriam argues with him and convinces Amram to remarry Yocheved and we produce Moshe, right? Beautiful. So we all know the end. We learned this when we were very young, and we know the end, so it's like clear what the right answer is. But I want to like roll us back to if we didn't know the right answer. If we were in that generation, who do you vote with? Amram. Obviously Amram, right? Right? You know, in a world where we have genetic testing, like, we make these decisions, right? You know, if we think that there's a high chance of death, right, infant death, we do things about that, right? We don't just, like, take our chances, right? If we had the, if we knew the statistics, we don't just take our chances, right? We vote with Amram all the time, right? So we have to appreciate, again, we know it so well, and we know that Miriam was right, right? So we have to appreciate that she was not obviously right at all, okay? Amrola Bito, so here she is. Abba Kasher, right, it's actually written in this, like, such, like, beautiful, clear, crystal clear Hebrew, or, like, very, like, yeah. Like, you know, it's Abba, right? Abba Kasher Zeratcha Yotem Mishtof Haro, Sheparo Lo Gazar El Hasharim, Vata Gazar El Hasharim Al Nekevot, Paro Lo Gazar El Bolam Hazeh, Vata Bolam Hazeh Ula Olam Haba, Paro Harasha Sefik Mitkayemet Zeratcha Sefik Eina Mitkayemet, Ata Tzadik Bivadai Shegzeratcha Mitkayemet Sheneemar, Vata Gzar Omer Vayakim Lach. Okay, so she makes a three-part argument, which Naomi argues is not a good argument, is, Abba, your Xera is so much worse than Paro's because you are also killing off all the girls. And you are killing off, like, even potential life. You're killing off, like, life that can be Zocha to Olam Haba because there's no life at all, right? In other words, and this is like also, you know, we could spend a lot of time just on the idea that living and dying is better than not living at all, right? And Paro's Zera, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, but yours will, okay? Flawed logic, according to Naomi, but nonetheless, Amram, like, hears her passion plea. It is effective. Amad v'chzirat isho, amdu kulan v'chzirat nishotehem. He gets up and remarries his wife, and the whole community follows him. Okay, so the next word in the pasuk is that it says, v'yikach, he married her. And the Gemara says it should say, v'yachzir, right, that he returned to her, the reason it says Vayikach is to tell us that, very beautiful imagery, that they actually had a new wedding ceremony, right? They actually remarried, very beautiful imagery. They had a little wedding, and little Aaron and little Miriam danced for their mother and father, the Chatan and Kala, right? Very beautiful scene, right? Right, yes, exactly. So, shot-wise, right, what is, the Midrash obviously is making up this conversation, but what is it picking up in the pshat, right? What
women's advice?
I'm asking even more pshat question. What words in the Torah indicate or hint at this whole story? Vayelech, right? What does it say? Vayelech ish mei be? Like, that sounds like very active, right? Initiating. And the point is, again, whether this conversation happened or not the way it happened, what is the point? Why is the word vayelech there? To demonstrate that in this point in time, right after the Gzeirah of Paro, a couple having a child is not to be taken for granted. It is a vayelech. It's an active decision to have a child under these circumstances. So that's the vayelech, right? That's the scene. That indicates that they had actually, they weren't sure what to do, and then they said, yes, we're going to go ahead. We're going to forge ahead. We're gonna hope for the best. And vayikach. And they said, let's start over. Let's do it again. What other, besides the words in this pasuk itself, what else is it responding to? Right, there's just a weird shot issue here, right, that it says, this couple got married, and they had a child, and his name ultimately becomes Moshe a few psukim later, right, by Bad Paro. What's just troubling about that?
He has older siblings.
Later, we're going to find out that he has older siblings. So this Midrash brings the older siblings into the scene, right? Why? How could it be that they got married and had Moshe? No, they got married and had Aharon, Miriam, and Moshe, right? How did they get married and have Moshe? Because Vayikach, because they had. So there's this hint at a separation and then a reunion that leads to Moshe. So like the story is, they're responding, they're sensitive to all these hints in the text. But again, whether it happens exactly like this, they're also trying to tell us that the hints in the text are trying to tell us, try to place us in that place of the kind of decisions that people had to be making at this point in time. Yeah.
I know that there are like discussions in terms of the skipping over of the Kahuna of the Bechora when like Moshe's chosen to sort of be the people as opposed to Aaron being chosen to be the people and like leadership roles there, and that's why Aaron gets Kahuna and whatnot. Could it be seen as like Moshe is in his own right a Bechora of some sort?
That's nice.
He's the firstborn in this new wedding.
That is nice. I like that. Okay, I'm not going to, listen, I'm really not going to read inside, the situation, right, the Midrash goes on, why, we'll say it outside, in this Midrash creation of this story, okay, we understand that there are hints that there's separation, there are hints for us to really imagine the tension that they were living in. Why did they give the credit to Miriam in this Midrash?
Could it be picking up on the fact that she watched over Moshe? It
might be picking up on the fact that she watched over, right? That's a very strange thing that happens, right? Moshe is in the Teva and the Or, and we find out that Miriam, who we now find out there was an older sister, right, is watching. What would you expect to happen?
The mom to watch.
You expect the mom to watch, or an alternative might be the dad, right?
Guys, come on. Feminist seminary. Nobody said
that. It's like a joke. You know, so how did we get to the big sister? So that might be a response to that. The Midrash also suggests that it's a response to a pasuk that comes much later, Shirat Hayam, right after, right, Miriam's part in Shirat Hayam, but Tikach Miriam HaNevia Achot Aharon, right after Moshe, as Yashir Moshe B'nei Yisrael, then we have Miriam taking the woman and singing, and the way it's phrased there is Vatikach Miriam HaNevia Achot Aharon. What is funny about this pasuk?
Why
is she identified? First of all, why has to be identified as anybody's achot? Like, we know who she is already, right? Why do we need that? Why is she identified specifically as achot Aharon in this case? And why is she also identified as Batikach Miriam HaNevi'ah? Right? This is of the Sheva Nevi'ot. This is the one who, like, it says very clearly she's a Nevi'ah, but why does it say it right here? Why is she identified as a Nevi'ah here? And why is she identified as achot Aharon? Put it all together.
She was only a Nevi'ah when she was
a Nevi'ah when she was a sister of Aharon, but not yet a sister of Moshe, because the nature of her Nevi'ah was that it was about Moshe's birth. Okay?
So, does that mean that she didn't have any other prophecies after?
No. But it could be the established ones. Why right now at Kriyat Yamsuf is why we now say, right, now is when she became a Nevi'ah, because
It became true,
right? This is the moment of the fulfillment of that Nevuah. Okay, so that's why she has to. It doesn't mean it's her only one, but this is the fulfillment of her Nevuah.
But that's not necessarily how we fully understand how prophecy to work.
Maybe not. This is one understanding.
Like,
okay.
She was a prophet, like from the get
go. Okay. So that's an interesting question, right, about how do we, right, some might argue that this is a big topic in Sefer Melachim, right, about how do we, like, what, how do we get to that, you know, how do we understand who is Nevuah? We're not going to see that now. No, it's tempting. I want to look again. We're going to come back to that, Ramban. I want to look again at the fact that the Gemara here doesn't only identify the Beschut Shitz Paniot as Miriam and Yocheved and Bapiro, but generalizes about the story of the woman of that generation. Okay. So the truth is that Perek Bet really brings us to Miriam and Yocheved and Bapiro. By the way, I intentionally said before, like, what about the dad? Because one of the things that's very striking about Perek Bet in Shmos is not only the dominant woman in the Perek, right, Miriam Yocheved, but it really is, like, really absentee dad, right?
He goes out to find her.
Like, you could say he gets married, and then he disappears from the story, right? Yocheved takes over and makes all the decisions. There's a brother and a sister, but Miriam is the one we see in Aaron, and maybe he's too young. But nonetheless, like, there are two siblings, and we see the female sibling and not the male sibling. And, you know, who else is absent from this passage, right? Because who's the next woman we're going to meet? Bat-Paro, and who's missing?
Paro.
Like, wouldn't you love to have been a fly on the wall to hear that conversation between Bat-Paro and Paro?
I adopted a Jewish baby.
Like, how did she pull that off, right? But there are no men in the scene at all, right? We have, really, absentee dad. He's there in order to father the child, and then we lose him, right? There are only women acting in this parak, okay? But I want to roll it back. Roll it back to the previous parak. Where I think we see that again, here we have zeroed in on this one family. It's kind of an important family, but in Perek Aleph, we actually deal with the more national experience. Let's turn to the back. I have much of Perek Aleph here, as you see in chart form, Okay, so Paro says to his nation, I see the Am B'nei Yisrael, they are overwhelming us. So Hava Nidchak Malo, let us be
smart, Martha.
Get outsmart them. And then, right? The next thing he does in Pasuk Yudalef is, so what are we going to do? Ve'yasimu alav sari misim. We're going to place tax collectors, okay? The Ramban famously asks, Hava nitchak malo, let's outsmart them. What is so smart about genocide? Right? Where's the wisdom here, right? I understand let's overpower them, but why is he saying let's outsmart them, right? So the Ramban, flipping back for a minute to the first side.
It seems like it's such an obvious solution that it's not intelligent.
Yeah. What is the chachma? Like, it doesn't take so much chachma to kill people, right? So what is the chachma here? So the Ramban famously says, Haven chachma lo, lo ra'a paro. The chachma yotzav lahakotam b'cheret, kitzia b'gidza gdola lahakot chinam ha'am asher ba'u ba'aretz b'mitzvat ha'melech ha'rishon, v'gam al ha'aretz lo yitnu reshut l'melech l'asot chamas kazeh. So what is so clever here is that Paro and his chachamim, his yotzim, understood, I'm not just going to go out to war against them, because that would be considered b'gidza gdola, that would be considered... did someone translate for me? Betrayal. Thank you. Couldn't come up with it. A tremendous betrayal for no reason to attack a nation who originally came to Mitzrayim as our invited guests, right? Right, Yosef's family was invited. Right, the story of Jewish history. Right, we invite the Jewish community and then we turn on them. Right, Paro says like it would be really treacherous of us to do that.
Let's just kill their babies instead.
But he doesn't say that. Right, that only happens later. That's what he says. But there's more. Right. So number one, he just thinks it's immoral. He actually acknowledges like there's a piece of him that can't bring himself to complete betrayal of that sort. But also, v'gam am ha'aretz lo yitnu reshut l'melech l'asot chamas kazeh. Also, the Mitzri people, won't give the melech permission to do something so outrageous. Ki yemehem hu mityaetz, right? He needs the people on his side. V'af ki b'nei Yisrael amra v'atzum v'yasu mehem l'chama gdola. But, and also his third concern, right? His first concern is actually an ethical concern. Second concern is he has to get his people on the side. And the third concern is that, Arav Atsum, right now, Am Yisrael are pretty strong. They will fight back. So what do I have to do in order to get past these three issues? I have to weaken them so they won't be able to fight back. And at the same time that I'm weakening them, I'm also going to go through a psychological process in which
I desensitize myself
and my so that, now if some of you are kind of thinking, oh, this sounds familiar, right? What you're thinking of Nazi Germany, right? And Nechama Leibowitz has a very powerful article in which she definitely uses this Ramban to point out the parallels to Nazi Germany. It really is, the Ramban is completely describing Nazi Germany. Okay, so what the Ramban describes is that when Paro did the chachma of Paro's plan is not killing people, the chachma of Paro's plan is that he psychologically, right, this is the Ramban at his best with his psychological, he dehumanizes the Jews so that in the end he can get to a point where he can get cooperation of his and no fight back from Am Israel to actually then start killing. Okay, so let's look at Pereth Aleph, where this process happens. Again, he says, have a nechachma, and then let's see how he does it. Okay, the Ramban actually outlines that there are several stages. I'm going to argue there's actually one more stage than the Ramban mentions. I'm not going to read the Ramban inside. Let's just see the stages in the Sukkim. The way the chart is divided, you can see that there are, on one side, I didn't label it, but on one side is a stage, right, verbs of what Paro does, and on the other side, we're going to see the results, okay? So stage one, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayasimu Alav Sarim Yisim Laman Anoto Besivotam Vayiven Aramis Kanot Leparo Et Pitzom Bet Ramses. Okay, so the first thing we do is we impose a tax, but this tax comes in the form of labor, people, right? They don't have to pay money. They have to actually contribute their labor in order to build these Aramis Kanopi Sudis for Paro, Pitom and Ramses. Now, what's the goal of this? Again, forget the Ramban for a minute that the goal is really to get further, but to physically weaken them so that, right, his concern is Am Rav Atzum. They are going to overpower us. So I'm going to physically weaken them, both by giving labor, right? So I'm going to economically weaken them, I'm going to physically weaken them. And he expects, well, why are they Rav Atzum? Because what's happening there?
It's too easy for them.
It's too easy for them, and therefore they are having, they're multiplying. Rav Atzum is just like in numbers, right? They're procreating, right? So if I take as a tax labor, so I'm going to have the scene that we described in the Gemara, right? What's going to be the, practically what's going to happen? I'm going to bring the men out and say, you owe me labor. So the men are going to be out there working, all the women are home, so presumably that will mean fewer babies, right? But, Pasuk Yud-Bet is the aftermath, because okay, but it doesn't work, but maybe the Ramban's part does work. What doesn't work? Right, as they torment them in this way, in your bed, in your throats, they keep multiplying. And the truth is, how does that happen? In fact, if they're out of the house doing slave labor, how is it that they keep multiplying? That's where the Gemara describes their story and saying, well, what? How is it actually happening? It must be that they're going out of the way to overcome all the practical challenges, and they are still procreating. And from the Ramban's perspective, by Yakutsumi Pnei Ben Yisrael, right, as they're still multiplying, the Mitzrim are saying, we're disgusted by them. These people just keep having babies, right? They're everywhere, right? So psychologically, that piece is working. Okay, next step. So it's working, but apparently they're still having babies, so it's not entirely working. So we up the ante. Pasuk Yud Gimel, by Avidim Mitzrayim and Bnei Yisrael Befarach. So now we go from taxes, which is apparently a normal enough thing to do in the ancient Near East. Shlomo HaMelech actually does it also when he's building Beit HaMikdash, is that the people have to do their time, right? It's a normal enough thing to do. But now that, number one, it hasn't been sufficient, and number two, the Mitzrayim are really disgusted by Am Yisrael, so they're ready to up the ante, so now we can now move into full-fledged Avodah, right? Yeah. The word in these two psukim, the word Avodah appears 5 times, Parach appears 2 times, right? This is now slavery, right? We've upped the ante to slavery. That's Pasuk Yud Gimel Yud Dalet. Pasuk Ted Vav is Vayomer Melech Mitzrayim Lemiyaldo, meaning that's already a new stage. Meaning what we don't have here is an outcome, right? Which sounds like maybe it's working, right? Maybe it's working. There isn't a counter reaction. But even though it's working, it seems that Paro decides to up the ante more, right? How does he up the ante more? This time he turns to the Mieldot, right? Here's where we meet Shifra and Pua, and he says, when the women are in labor, right? If you see it's a boy, then quietly, secretly kill him. If it's a girl, then you can. So we're hitting genocide, but we're still, we'll see in a minute the difference between that step and the next step. But that's Ted Vav Ted Zayin. Yud Zayin here is a reaction. What's the reaction?
Gender side.
That's a thing.
Gender side is a thing. Not now. We're over time. Okay, this actually also doesn't work, right? It doesn't work because the Miel don't say, hey, we couldn't do it. We couldn't do it. Okay, so after it doesn't work, so then we get to Pasuk Kafet, which is the end of the Perek and the Parshia, and Paro now does, Vayitzav Paro l'chol amo l'mor, kol haben ha'yilod ha'yirav t'shlechu, v'chol matzachayun. That's it, none of this miyaldot secretly doing it, he just called out to his am. That's it, genocide, okay? Reaction to that? Well, the Perek ends and the Parshia ends and there's no reaction, but the next Perek opens with zeroing in on one particular family who tell us the story of Moshe, of having a child even under these circumstances. And that's what the Midrash is saying, right? The Midrash is saying, imagine that at that point this whole community had to make a decision. How do we react to this new Zera? And the answer seems to be, well, here's one family that had a baby, right? So apparently, it also doesn't work. Okay, so we have four stages. The Ramban adds in the four stages, look at how Paro does it in terms of, again, the psychological buildup. Not only is it getting harsher, right, but look at how he does it. The first time he does it, the first stage is Vayasimu Alav. They placed on him. Who's the they and who's the him?
The Mitzrim Alav.
B'nai Yisrael being referred to as Am B'nai Yisrael in singular, right? So it's somewhat anonymous, right? They. I don't know who they are. The government, right? They placed a tax. Next stage is Vayavidu Mitzrayim et B'nai Yisrael b'farach. Right now they are, it's still national, there's nothing personal going on here, but it's now we're naming. It's Mitzrayim and B'nai Yisrael. Like we're being a little bit more forward about what's going on here. Then we get a little more secretive again, right? Melech Mitzrayim goes quietly to the Yaldos. Melech Mitzrayim then goes quietly again. He's trying to keep it under the radar, right, to the Meldot. It doesn't work. And then, Vayitzav Paro l'chol amo, right? In that psychological buildup, we've gotten to the point that Paro himself, he doesn't have to stand behind anything. Paro himself can get out and make a public announcement. This is what we're doing. We're killing people. So you've seen the buildup, not only the severity, but the buildup psychologically of Paro's willingness to stand behind this policy, right? First he hides a little bit, but then he stands behind it. Okay, let's talk about, we're going to get back
to this from Apple soon.
Yeah, we're going back to apples very soon. Here we go. The next thing I want to point out, and last thing I want to point out in the four stages here, is that they can really be divided into two sets of two, right? Because the first two stages are labor and then shiabud, right? Then slavery. And the next two stages are geared at directly at, like, the reproductive system, right? So first it's quiet, right, attempt, and then it's a louder attempt, right, a very public attempt to kill the baby boys, right? So there are definitely two sets of two, and each one gets more extreme, right? What's the difference in terms of gender between the two sets, right? The first two are geared towards the men, right? We're going to have the men as slaves. We're going to weaken them so that they won't have children. Seems to be not working, right? Why is it not working? Because the women are not letting work. So Paro turns his attention to the women themselves. Okay, I'm going to go right into the reproductive system and put an end to it, right? And there...
But killing the babies isn't...
Well, he's going into the birth, right? Right, at the moment of birth, right? Or then when that doesn't work, immediately after the moment of birth, right? So that is really directed, right? He calls in the Mialdot into his palace, right? It's directed explicitly at the female population, right? So we have stage one towards the men, doesn't work. Stage two towards the men. Maybe it's starting to have some impact because we don't actually record a reaction to that. But I guess not enough of impact because Paro turns the direction to stage one towards the women, doesn't work, and then full out stage two. Okay, as Becca said, why did we get to this from apples? So let's go back to the apples. What are the apples? The apples represent...
The women
giving birth under the apple tree, right? The charoset is machloket, right? It's a machloket between between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Levi. Sorry, I didn't wrong guard. Rabbi Levi says the charoset is all about the apples. It's all about remembering the woman's story. And Rabbi Yochanan says it's all about the mortar, which is all about
remembering
the men's story, right? And Abaye says, therefore, because of this machloket, what do we have to do? Both, right? We actually want to remember both sides of the story, right? So the charoset is bringing together the two sides of the story. It represents the tzitz, which represents the shiavud. It represents the slavery that the men are experiencing, the hard labor that the men are experiencing, but it represents the apple, which is the resistance, okay? Now think about when you eat food. Right? It's really, really significant, right? Chazal talked about this also, but I think we all know this, right? One of the most disconcerting things that can happen for some reason, which we don't know why, is you pick up a drink and you think it's one thing and you drink it and it's something else, right?
Yeah.
Like, our like assumptions about food, we want to see it first because like that seems to be a very significant part of the eating process. In our experiences, we have to meet the food before we can eat it, or it throws us off, right? So, how do we meet the charoset? Right, we see it, right? And what does it look like? It looks like
apples.
No, it looks like
it looks disgusting.
No, right? It depends.
Right, what is it supposed to look like? Right, the teats is the consistency. Right, what it's supposed to look like when it's on the cement. Right, what it's supposed to look like when it's on the table is cement. Right, so the first way we meet it is to remind us of shiavud, and that's the story we all learned in Gan. Right, but only when you taste it, right, which is stage two, you taste the apple. Right. So that's the resistance, right? The story of Mitzrayim on the front, like when you first meet it, it's a story of shiavud. But underneath, right beneath the surface there, the story of Mitzrayim is a story of the apple, right? It's a story of Am Yisrael, and particularly the Nashim Tzidkaniyot Shebotzo Hadzor saying, we're not going to give in to this, right? We're going to keep going. We're going to have hope.